Are there any questions? Yes.
I use Firefox and Thunderbird.
Very good.
And I'm intrigued as to how the Mozilla organization, since they give these things away completely free, Mozilla must have some dollar cost.
Yes, they do.
Pay some people to do something.
Four programmers.
Buy servers and computers. They have to pay the electric company for the power. Where are those expenses being covered?
In the case of Mozilla, okay, they have Mozilla is actually a foundation, and a foundation that wholly owns a subsidiary corporation. The corporation is allowed to make money, you know, and carry a profit from year to year, while the foundation has to give up the money every year. The corporation has paid for programmers. Where do they get their money from? They have a deal with Google. If you look in the top right of the default Firefox, I guess that's right for you, you see the Google search bar, where if you type something into the Google search bar, it goes to Google and looks it up. Well, Google makes ad revenues whenever you type something into that. And they share a portion of those ad revenues with the Mozilla Corporation. The last year for which figures were released, which I think is 2004 or 2005, Mozilla Company made $56 million from their deal with Google. I'm not sure what they're doing with all the other money, because I'm pretty sure four programmers are not being paid $56 million. I guess it's servers or something. Other free software typically has deals with corporate sponsors. A lot of them find free hosting through companies that are willing to support hosting, and universities which are willing to support hosting. So for Mozilla, they have a really good deal. Other free software doesn't have quite such a good deal that they're actually making money, but they have supporters. Does that answer your question? Okay. You, sir.
Yes. I think a point that also could be made
certainly
is that I've noticed that every single free software tool has its website of support and group of people who are supporting it. And I think a very important point is that if you compare the number of programmers who support free software with the number of programmers who work for Microsoft, working on Microsoft products, the difference, the ratio, is unbelievable in favor of the free software people. Maybe they're not doing it full time, but the people all over the world working on these things. And it makes a competitive situation. I think Microsoft is, doesn't have the resources to keep up, really.
Yeah. The last figures I saw was Microsoft had about 30,000 paid programmers, which is quite a few. On the other hand, active contributors to free software, people who are contributing code at least once a week, there are about 40 to 50,000 of them. On the other hand, there is a huge number of people contributing to free software less often than once a week, who find a bug and fix it. And that's actually really useful. No, Microsoft has to hire 10 people to fix all the bugs in Windows, maybe 10,000 people. But free software people are fixing bugs as they find them. So you're right, the community size is huge in free software compared to Microsoft. And there are people who really care about the software. You, sir, it's a blue flag.
You had mentioned the advantages of the community fixing its own bugs. What I don't understand is what keeps bugs from creeping in to the fixed bugs versus the one bug in the first place.
So, the added new feature, the first person who uses that feature is the person most likely to discover a bug in it, right? So he fixes the bug, and he sends the bug into the person who maintains the program, who gives the program out to everybody else. Okay? The first person who uses that new feature which has the bug fixed is also the next person who's most likely to discover a new bug, and so on and on and on. If 1,000 people use the program before I do, and none of them discover a bug, but I do, I have the opportunity to fix it. And I've fixed a few bugs myself. So yes, bugs do creep in. I'm not saying free software doesn't have bugs. In fact, nobody who uses free software will tell you that free software doesn't have bugs because we encounter them. But generally, I feel, this is a biased opinion, that free software has less bugs on average than proprietary programs.
What about the situation where there are no bugs, but someone fixes it anyway?
You mean adding new features?
No. No, I didn't mean that. They didn't really understand how the program works, so they try to improve it when in fact they're not improving it at all.
Well, there is typically one person who's in charge of maintaining each program. For example, Mr. Tavolz is responsible ultimately for all the changes to the Linux kernel. So when he sees a patch come in, an improvement or a bug fix, he gets to look at it. And if he doesn't think it's a bug fix, if he doesn't think it's an improvement, he doesn't have to apply it.
So there's essentially a chain of command.
There is essentially a chain of command.
And the user that made it, that loves it, can still use it.
He can use it himself, he can fork off the project and create his own version of software with his own improvement. Mr. Terrell, do you want to add something?
One of the things that a lot of software projects do is they have bug management tools, where once one finds the bug, they'll report the bug. And before most people will look at it, people need to confirm that the bug exists. So they will confirm the bug exists and provide examples where the bug occurs. And then people will give proposed patches for that. So if a patch comes in for a bug that isn't in the bug report, most of the time they'll say, well, put in a bug report for it and we'll see if it's confirmed. That would be the solution to that.
Yeah, so you don't need to be a programmer to report bugs. Yeah, you, sir.
Well, also, I'm wondering how much of the lower number of bugs on the free software is due to the people in fixing it, and how much is also due to the fact that the structure requires you to have a software architecture that is maintainable. In other words, if the thing isn't modular and well-defined, the volunteers are not going to be able to fix it and the fraud is going to finish. Whereas there isn't that incentive for things to be well-organized in some of the products, like Microsoft in particular.
What I think you're essentially saying is that free software developers don't have management, which means we produce superior quality software.
Because software that can't be supported through your structure disintegrates.
True.
So it forces them to have a structure of the software, whereas in Microsoft will think, yeah, we'll make promises to people later, but hey, put it in anyway.
Right, few people are paying free software programmers, so the incentive for the free software programmers is to work on projects they can actually work on, that they feel like they're accomplishing something. Is there a question there, or you just want to point that out?
How much of the lack of bugs is due to the programmer's effort, and how much is due to the fact that software products that aren't maintainable will just disintegrate and be replaced by something else?
I hate to use management buzzwords, but I think there's a synergistic combination of those two, of the people who are fixing bugs themselves and the programmers who aren't working on programs that aren't maintainable. I think there's a combination that ends up producing the high-quality software. You, sir.
Good question. What do you think of how does the business model, or can you comment on it, where people contribute and then become consultants? For the interest of MySQL or Joomla or
it's a great deal for the programmers. If you write free software programs, you can add it to your resume. I wrote these free software programs, and future employers or people who hire consultants can go and look at that code. And they can examine it and they can see that it is really high quality code. It's a really good deal. Is it a good business model? If your project is successful. You know, when you're starting a project, you don't know whether it's going to be successful or not. You hope it's going to be successful, but I've started projects that ended up being utter failures that nobody ever used. So I didn't get to be one of those high-pay consultants.
In other words, it's like playing the lottery.
It's like starting a proprietary software program. If you go and write a shareware program and start giving away, there's no guarantee you're going to make money from it. Free software is the same way. You, sir.
What's the common language you use when you're a common editor?
There is no common language. There's a lot of... Every program... All the popular programming languages have compilers or interpreters for them in the free software world. C, C++, Python, Perl, Fortran, Java just recently, and you know, all the other languages you can think of. They're supported in free software. And there's a lot of fresh and new languages that are being written in free software, started off in free software. For a common editor, no. There are about at least 100 semi-popular editors. Now, free software has Emacs and Vi, which are old-school programmer editors that a lot of people use. Those are the, you know, preeminent text editors. We also have integrated development environments. We have a few of those, depending on what programming language you use. I guess you can call Emacs an integrated development environment if you want.
Well, is there a website for each of these different languages underneath the free software?
Sure. If you want to learn programming, is that it? Use of program? Well, type in the name of your favorite programming language into Google and type in free software or open source after it. And you'll find the interpreter or you'll find the compiler for it. You.
C language is now officially the new project. I believe the GCC is the official C of record at this point. MCR and AT&T have it relinquished. Is that correct?
I wasn't aware of that. I thought we were all still following ANSI standard C, you know, as a standard. And GCC does do ANSI standard C with a few new extensions. You know, for example, you can use C++ style comments.
But they're basically the reference.
I guess. Intel maintains its own compiler for C, which is, they build it to standard of the GCC. They make sure that it can compile all the same code that GCC, the GNU compiler selection, which was usually formerly called the GNU C compiler. It can compile all the same code as GCC.
Okay.
So, I don't know the answer. More questions? You.
Back to the bug issue. Having managed projects with significant software content at one time or another, regression testing is a major part of the task. Whenever you created a new build, one has to go back far enough to make sure that whatever changes you're making don't screw up something else inadvertently.
Absolutely.
Without a very well-defined management structure for managing changes to free software, how is something like regression testing decided upon and who does it?
Well, I'll tell you about the Mozilla project. They have a regression testing framework. It's probably, I would guess, it's the most extensive in free software at this point. And they have all the programs they need to run the regression test on every build. Now, they build Mozilla several times a day, depending on which product you're using. And every time they build it, if they get any errors in the regression testing, they send it to the person who added the code which caused the failure. They can see which code it's been added. You know, it's the same regression testing that I imagine it works in the proprietary software world. And it works really well. They have maintainers for each section of Mozilla. So the toolbar has a maintainer, the user interface has a maintainer, the actual people who turn HTML into elements on the screen has a maintainer. Those people are ultimately responsible for the changes, and they know who's made the changes and who fails when the regression test work fails. If the regression test work doesn't catch the problem, then it's up to the users to catch it. And there are people who download each new build in Mozilla. Some of them download it every day to test it out to see if there are any bugs. So part of our regression testing framework is users, which are pretty good people at catching bugs.
The maintainers do the configuration management of their particular module. Is that a correct statement?
They're ultimately responsible for any changes to the code in their particular module.
So they do the configuration control of they give you a premature for any accepted change to the code. Is that correct?
Yes, they have rules. Any other questions? You.
I need to ask one question.
Go ahead.
I did not hear you talk about Bitcoin. Can you give an example?
About Bittorrent. Well, Bittorrent is a file sharing application. It's an application which was started as free software, released as free software. What considerations do you want to measure at? Is it popular?
Yes.
Or what?
People are drawing attention to it, so it's like getting free stuff as they otherwise would just bother.
I think what he's saying is that maybe BitTorrent is being used in a way to violate copyright and is therefore attracting bad attention to the idea of free software because of the complaints of media.
Yeah.
exactly correct. Microsoft has creating peer-to-peer files that are outdated. It's up to people who use them, take responsibility for them, but yes, so it has to come to us, and I don't know what to do about it. I mean, BitTorrent has legal uses, has, you know, one of the uses I use for is to download the CDs, the ISO images, put on CD for me to share them with people. So it has legitimate uses, and I like it a lot, but it doesn't go bad in BitTorrent. Great.
Thank you. No problem.
Whenever I develop a new operating system on a hard drive, I always initially have a problem with putting on drive releases to this motherboard. And invariably, I just recently did one. Fortunately, I saved my original CD. And lo and behold, they'll have little drivers for different windows. Didn't find any drivers for the flavors of Linux. So where do you go to get drivers?
If it's not on the CD you use, it might not be available. It might be that that's a piece of hardware we don't support yet. And the reason we don't support hardware is the reason that I explained earlier, because the hardware companies keep secrets from us, and because they use patents to protect what we can and cannot do.
In addition to the CDs, are there websites that have collections of drivers?
The thing is, okay, the reason you don't find a lot of drivers external to Linux is because everybody has it to the Linux code itself. Right? If you have a piece of hardware, instead of complaining to the Linux about it, you have to write it yourself. So all the drivers, the most of them, are added to the kernel itself. If you know what hardware you have, you might be able to go to the manufacturer of the hardware's website and search for Linux and find a driver that will run on that. It only works with some cases, particularly it only works with graphics cards and wireless. Yeah.
In my search for drivers a couple of times, I got the website manufacturer and said the driver exists on the following distribution. We don't have it for download. So use one of these. One of them was Ubuntu, one of them, you know, and so on down the line. So they're saying, yeah, our driver we created and we donated it to them. And there it is on the CD.
They don't want to have to support it.
Yeah, in a lot of cases.
It also protects them legally. There's a lot of reasons why.
Well, once I found that on the CD, it wasn't installed. It was there. And I hooked it into it.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it didn't start working. But I had to go to the manufacturer to find out how it can. Because there's so much on the CD that I don't know.
Are there any questions?
Not so legal.
In other words, it's up to the people who run the distribution.
Exactly.
it's all over the place. And like for Debian and Red Hat, do they have any policies on this? Or
Debian and Red Hat, the distributions themselves have policies that they won't include any legal code. Now, Debian and Red Hat both have repositories maintained by people who include packages that will run on Debian or Red Hat, which include legal code. So they're not part of the distribution themselves. Their policy is that they're going to be a legal distribution because, you know, Red Hat is a corporate company, it can be sued, Debian is a non-profit, it can be sued as well.
Any other questions? Is there an incentive to stay legal to some degree by the fact that you're not going to get corporate sponsorship if you're doing a lot of illegal things?
Well, there's that. There's the incentive to be able to do.
That's what we're saying, right?
More important than that is the fear of being sued. That's usually enough.
Yeah.